This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3546 for Monday the 7th of March 2022. Today's show is entitled, HPR Community News for February 2022, and is part of the series, HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers, and is about 61 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Dave, Ron and Ken talk about shows released, and comments posted in February 2022.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, community news for February 2022. Joining me this evening is live from Scotland.
Now I know who you're referring to. It's me, it's Dave Morris.
You ruined it, Dave. I was being all professional there for a second. And also joining me from the left. right from the other side of the pond is
it's Rowan in Baltimore.
Oh god, you know, if this was a professional show I'd be pressing stop, going back and editing this all out, but I'm not gonna bother.
We'd probably get a card for the end of it.
Don't bother next time,
just stick with the script, Dave, that's all you have to do. Anyway, HPR, as you can tell, is a community podcast that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday, on any topic that's of interest to hackers. HPR Community News, which is this episode within the podcast, is where regular contributors just like you come along and give some feedback on the previous shows and discuss all the comings and goings and stuff that's been happening in the background that you might not be aware of, because after all, HPR is a community project. So Dave, as is traditional, you will introduce the new hosts.
Yes, and we really do have a new host this time, and whose name I believe is Takov751. So there we go, welcome. Excellent. On board.
So first things first, let's go through all the shows from last month. And the first one was HPR 3522, and it was setting up robot building lab and builds for $0 robot platform, and it was by Mechatronic.
Yes, and very cool.
Basically took the guts of printers and stuff and got quite a lot of harvested for parts, which I would always recommend you do.
Yeah, I've seen other people on YouTube doing this. You can get some excellent pulleys and bearings and just nice straight steel, I assume, rods and stuff if you want to make devices of any sort.
Yes, and stay tuned, this won't be the last we'll see of that, I can assure you.
Yes, I found it interesting. I think it was this one. I know you got a couple as you hinted, but the TreeSap for getting your flux to flow, I think, was one of the hints on that one. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Mind blown. I'm
glad you mentioned that. That's actually quite good, isn't it? Yeah. I'm not quite sure what that was. Was that like pine resin or something?
Yeah, it was pine sap.
Yeah. So it's the thing you use on your bow if you're a violinist or a cellist or whatever. That's the one. Yep.
So no comments on that as yet. But the following day, DNT, do not translate, or Planet Vertala, as they say in Dutch, the compose key for X, GNOME, and Windows. And this I use quite a lot, actually. I didn't use it quite a lot, but then I suddenly started using it quite a lot. Don't know if you set that up, folks. So this one is bookmarked now on my computer, I can assure you.
Yeah, I did this a year or so back, and running KDE, I've got it as one of the auto-starty things when KDE starts up. So yeah, I don't know how I lived without it.
I haven't had a chance to do this yet, but it was very interesting. I hadn't really thought about the compose key. So I think I definitely want to try some of these things out.
So I'll do the first comment, and it was by Linux Mint XFCE. Thank you very much. I've been working on learning languages with Duolingo, but the special characters I've ignored because I could not enter them easily. My notes with Vim were correct, but because I could easily map keys, but I had no idea how to do it in Linux in general without entering a bunch of keys that sometimes conflicted with the app. So all I had to do was settings, keyboards, select a layout tab, slide off use system defaults, under compose keys, select right alt, close everything under settings, and then step two, VI, or basically edit the file in your home directory, dot capital X, capital C, O-M-P-O-S-E, X compose, a file that they did not have, by the way, and then modify it as shown in the link to the most excellent wiki on the internet, well, second perhaps, Arch Linux Wiki on how to configure compose keys. Then save, reboot, and you're done. To do might be to add special keys for repetitive tasks. So I would say that's a thumbs up. What would you say?
I think I would agree with that. That's damn good, I would say.
That's handy because you can actually add your own shortcuts in there, which is super.
Yeah, that's not a thing I've done. So that's a thing to go and investigate.
So part two of the apocalyptic robot build, easy for me to say, wheel addendum, how to reliably attach wheels to a PAR robot platform. And this again was by Mechatronic, and JB Weld was used. To give you a spoiler, lots of cool images in the show notes. And if you have not seen this this hack of a remote control car, you really need to go have a look at the picture. 11 is a classic.
Yes, thing of beauty, absolutely.
Strikes me as something we would use as a movie prop in a psycho horror film, and you know, the Bruce Willis is hiding behind the couch with a gun, and then all of a sudden this thing kind of comes in beside him. cue the couch exploding, etc.
Absolutely,
definitely captures that post. Apocalyptic theme.
That is the one, yes. Ah, yes. Battle in English Part 4. Good. Confusing plurals, where Dave tries to teach us grammar. He does. Zoak says, and let me see, how about Rowan? Can you do Zoak?
Sure.
English accent
Multiple
is
words.
Optional.
Multiple words in a row. I was talking about the horses and cart sign, and the guy that made it left too much space between horse and cart. And they completely contrived one about had, where someone doing a test used had, someone else had. However, the examiner preferred had. Smith, where Jones had the examiner's approval.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll do mine. Where Jones had was my title. Hi, Zoak. Thanks for the comment. The had things were a favorite of my late father, so they were instilled into my brain from an early age. It was great to be reminded of them. Thanks. Smiley face.
And DNC said, processes. Now I think we're seeing some people take plurals like crises.
Crises.
Okay, I'll obviously edit this out. Not. WDNT with processes. Now I think we're seeing some people take the plurals like crisis into any plural word that ends with ease. So we're hearing people say processes, start talking about processes, and I stop listening. Do people do that, really?
You better believe it, absolutely.
But, okay, fine, whatever. Processes, disease? Okay.
Why not? said, thanks. I learned something new here and will listen to other episodes in this series too.
And the why not is spelled W-Y-N-A-U-T. Yes, we approve of that.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm replying. To which David said?
I said to DNT reprocesses, I'm also reluctant to people floundering about with these apparently random singulars and plurals. After all, there are some amazingly good resources on the internet that explain unusual words and where they came from. However, I suppose you need some sort of incentive to look. Oh, shall I do my other one? Hope you find the episodes useful. Why not? Why not? I think if the English pronunciation doesn't quite work, but never mind. Or mine doesn't anyway. Hi, thanks for the comment. Hope you find the whole set of episodes useful, I said.
Excellent. Apparently, English gets more comments than tech shows. There you go.
That's why I think you with them. There's obviously people who have the same brain problems that I do. Look at these things and go, oh no, they've spelt it wrong. Somebody's wrong on the internet. And yeah,
this is why when people say to me, should I record a show about it? I default say yes, because you have no idea what people are going to find interesting or not. Not saying it's not interesting, Dave, by any means, but.
Oh, I get the message clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, community news was the next day, and we had one comment by Trey, and the comment was, I was sad that there was no comments on the December community episodes, so I had to leave a comment on this one. You all do an amazing job ensuring that every podcast for the month receives discussion. As an infrequent HBR contributor, I enjoy comments on my podcast and hear your thoughts. Surely others feel the same. Keep up the glorious work. Thank you very much for your comments. Always a good thing to supply comments to shows, if you can.
Yeah. People are waiting for things sometimes.
Yeah, it does make your day.
Yeah, it really does. It's good to know that there really is somebody listening out there.
So the next day we had My Geeky Experiment Part 3, where Claudio talks about upgrading his Asus EPC901 netbook to updating the SSD in that, and I am very jealous of his netbook because it's hard to find that form factor. You can get the Chromebook form factor, but you can't find a netbook form factor with like proper keys in the proper places and stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice little machine. I've got the next one up. Is it the 1001? I can't remember what the serial number is, but it's not in use now, but I used to use it when I had a small consultancy business. That was the thing I took to meetings and visits to clients and stuff. Great little thing.
So there are two comments on that. Do you guys want to take them? Rowan, perhaps first.
Sure. We have comment one from Wendigo. PATA and netbooks. My Dell Mini 9 has the same PATA interface, so it seems like it was all the rage during the netbook days. Between that and 32-bit Atom processors, I'm afraid mine is reaching the limit of its usefulness. Mine's regulated to console and frame buffer apps. Kudos on getting yours running Chromium.
Claudio M. says, re-PATA and netbooks. I hear you on extending the lives of these devices nowadays, but with OpenBSD and Fluxbox, along with the SSD and adapter, is surprisingly useful. Firefox won't build on OpenBSD / x86. It's segfault since it needs more memory, so it won't be including it any longer. SeaMonkey is still available, but not sure for how much longer.
Interesting. And Slackware on a netbook, in response to HBR 3512, this is Archer 72's update on the build, and includes links to several different commands, which are all worth knowing in their own right. Sensors was a new one to me.
Yeah, I actually use. I was like, "Huh, I like that sensors command because my laptop when I'm running a VM and." A couple things going. It's been really, the fan's been kicking up high, and occasionally it'll just like it'll just stop. Like it crashed, like it just shuts down. And so I started monitoring it just to see if it was like a heating issue using the sensor's command.
And it's just surprisingly obvious command that I'm amazed I never typed it before. Yeah. Sensors. Oh, look at all that information.
Yeah, I didn't know about that either. I knew how to do it on a Raspberry Pi, but not on a big boy machine.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice little command. You can even get it set up to like run like every so many seconds and show you the differences on the like what changed between the last reading and everything. It's pretty cool.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. I just started using Conkey, just going back to Conkey just for the amusement of it. Maybe you can configure that in there somewhere.
Cool. And that ignore lid switch things. I must say about Archer's episodes, they tend to be short, but they are like, you know, very distilled down to, oh, right, didn't know that sort of stuff.
It's like the short story of your podcast. You cut out everything but the essence.
What's that? The yellow cheat notes that people used to get before exams, those books.
Cliff notes.
That's it. The cliff notes on exactly. Fantastic. Okay. Next day we have the Linux in-laws. The 2-year plan of the 5-year plan. Probably. shameless self-promotion of Redis presentation at the 2021 Mini DevConf and Grumpy Old Co, who are a podcast. Actually, this is quite funny, guys. A lot of playful banter going on between the two.
Yes, the non-interview shows are very, very high in banter.
Yes, yes. So there's no comments on that, nor on the next one, which was file names and ASCII, which is amazing stuff about the basically the old file names, where they come from, asterisk, dot asterisk, et cetera, et cetera. I know you don't like extensions, Dave, but I do.
Well, they're okay.
But they have their place. You just not supposed to use them.
I occasionally use them, and then I'm amazed that Vim says, oh, there's an extension on this file. I will fire up all the things to do with Bash. There you go. And I go, oh, didn't realize I did that.
It is quite handy, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like having to label my shoes or something. It's shoe. Can't you tell what they are from what they do?
No. No, you can't. It's like you not putting a label saying diesel on the petrol car. Yeah, you've got two cars, they both take fuel, and you have no clue but just by looking at it what type of fuel they are, whether it's electric, whether it's diesel, or whether it's petrol.
You might be able to deduce it fairly quickly, but sniff around it. I do take your point. But I came from an operating system. I worked with VMS, as I said before, about 10 years, and every file has its own type, so you know you don't need to say this is a blah blah file because the file itself tells you. When I discovered Unix in the 80s or whenever it was, I was amazed how they'd done something very similar with all this magic number businesses in files. You know, there are things that look and say, oh look, it's got a start bash thingy, hash bang thing, so that'll be a bash file, then I'll treat it like a bash file, etc., etc. All those things were done, so I at the start felt it was only stupid Windows that you needed to tell it what it was, otherwise it had a huge sulk. I've always wanted to go with that because it seemed like the sensible way to handle it.
So this is the one thing from my old Mac HFS days with the resource fork, because I always liked, one, that you didn't have to use extensions, but two, you could, like, I mean, granted you had to use a utility, but you could modify a specific file to tell it which program to open with. So, like, not all your JPEGs had to open with whatever the default was, or you didn't have to pick. You could say, oh, okay, right now I'm editing them, so I could change it to, you know, GIMP, or, you know, at the time, whatever the app was to edit it, but others would open up in the preview automatically.
Okay, That's the show. Bye.
Oops, sorry.
That's very cool. I like that.
It's cool. I had no idea, but you need to do a show on that now. Sorry about that.
Okay, I will do that.
The subject of how operating systems work out what the hell the file is that they're dealing with is quite an interesting one in general, I think. So
yeah, it is.
Bit of scope there, I think.
Possible series. Get Claudio on for to do the BSDs, and we'll see how far we go. Next day, we had Barrier Software KVM, and as Windigo says, this is the sort of software that if you need it, you'll love it. If you don't need it, you're kind of going, why did I ever want to have this? And I fall into the first category. It's absolutely brilliant if you know it exists and you have that particular use case, which is multiple computers and you want to use the same keyboard and mouse on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool stuff. We tended to, when I was working, people tended to have multiple computers in their office, and they would have one keyboard, one mouse, and then a mechanical KVM between them. I still got one in the house somewhere with buttons on it and stuff that you
huge
you
heavy selected. Cables as well. Yeah.
Oh, the cables are massive. Yeah.
Yep.
I must dig that out sometime just to show the kids. Look at this. What do you think this is? And they say, it's rubbish, Dad. Throw it away. But that's the usual. That's usually where the conversation goes.
Oh God. I just told you I've just come back from my fifth visit to Ireland since my dad passed away, and now we're going through the stuff. And this is exactly it, you know. Anyway, go on.
No, I think I'd probably the time to shut up. Probably, but it was very interesting. And there are software KVMs. There's also Raspberry Pi KVM. I've seen people talking about. So that's quite a cool thing as well. If you've got multiple Raspberry Pis and you set up a monitor and keyboard for the lot of them, and then you're using them, you know, in your 19-inch rack or whatever, that's very, very good.
Very impressive.
Whose turn is it to do comments? Shall I do this one from Trey, or who wants to do?
I'll do it. Trey, old school KVMs, thank you for sharing. I remember taking apart an old mechanical KVM to clean the contacts for more reliable operation. I still have electronic KVMs floating around, but haven't had the need in quite some time. I definitely need to look at using Barrier. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, good point. It's good to know about, definitely.
I had a setup in work where I used Raspberry Pi as a second monitor, as a second device, without a keyboard and mouse on it. In fact, USB was completely disabled on it. And you could SSH into it and then pipe Barrier's equivalent to control it via keyboard KVM, which is extremely specific. I think I even may have done a show on that at one stage.
Good. Very useful, though.
Yes. Next day, we had self-hosting in a small scale, episode zero, disclaimer, and the general idea. This is what on Takov 751, our new host, came on to the HPR Matrix channel and was discussing this idea, to which I suggested that they record a show. And they did. See how easy it can be. So I'd like to see, this idea of running Docker images. I was never a huge big fan of it until quite recently, specifically when Tlatu did his show about quickly starting up a Docker image that downloads it, you run bash, and then that's it, it's over. That just, to me, made it one step more functionality than, you know, having a Flatpak. I'm kind of using some Flatpaks now, and that makes Docker containers into the same ease of use sort of level. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this sort of thing. Why suffer when you can make tea the easy way with the new Tea Express?
Indeed, indeed.
Maybe I like the misery of making tea.
I like the comment about the home automation and home assistant stuff.
Yes, yes.
And I'm seriously looking at setting that up at some point, and using Docker to do it is often recommended as a way of getting better functionality.
Correct. And unfortunately, there were no comments on that, but don't let that disturb you. And the next day, we had a show about porridge. Literally, about porridge. Tukutoroto said, interesting. Porridge is one of those things that many people probably find very mundane. But when you start digging into details, you discover a lot of interesting tidbits. Like, what kind of grains are for animals and which are for humans varies from culture to culture and from one period to another.
And then Trey said, steel cutouts. Thank you for sharing. I absolutely love steel cutouts. Much better than rolled, in my humble opinion. Looking forward to your next podcast topic.
So I commented on this one. Great show topic. Excellent show. I was listening to this while making porridge for my breakfast. I have some steel cut oats. I live in Scotland, after all, but I tend to prefer rolled oats, probably because it's what I was brought up on in England, mind you. In Scotland, steel cut oats are called pinhead oatmeal. My porridge gets salt and a teaspoon of honey. I'm diabetic, so I avoid sugars, but only recently found that honey has a low glycemic index, about 50 probably, so it's not going to give me a sugar high like sugar would, at least not a teaspoon of it. I used to visit the Far East each year many years ago, and I became quite keen on rice porridge, which is called congee. It's very bland, but it's eaten with lots of added stuff like pickles and roast peanuts and was pretty good for breakfast. Great show. I enjoyed the ambient sound aspects a lot.
Yep. There you go. Porridge and shows about English. This is what our tech podcast network has to send it to folks. So if you're real hardcore tech, now you need to send in shows on that. Of course, if you've got more shows on porridge and more shows on different things about languages, please send them in as well. I don't care. Keep the shows coming.
Techies eat porridge, I'm sure, yeah. Yes, and they also speak in their languages, so there you go.
Some do, indeed. And the following day, we had a show about vernier calipers, which I submitted. And Arn B wrote, at 66 years old, I bought one about 4 years ago, and I'm surprised how much I used it. Here is a nice YouTube video that shows how an even cheap eBay version works great. And the link is included there, which is at bigclive.com. One, which is one that kind of prompted me to record this episode in the first place, along with the fact that one of the guys in work saw it behind me in a conference call.
Very cool. I didn't look at the video yet. I should check it out. I have one of the later ones with a little electronic display thingy on it. I'm not sure how accurate that is. I actually prefer yours. But it's an amazingly useful thing. Gets a fair bit of use in this house.
I have two, as I said, two electronic ones, but they eat batteries, so I take the batteries out of them, and then by the time I want to put the batteries in and you're faffing about with it, then I'm able to read it off the mechanical one a lot easier. So it's all the time.
Yeah, I was surprised how quickly these little tiny cells get eaten up by this thing just sitting there, apparently switched off, but not.
I think the Big Clive video, the recent generation ones, the really plastic ones, have excellent battery life, I recall him saying. You should have one in your toolbox. They're brilliant.
Definitely a good thing to have, yes.
This definitely reminded me, I'm pretty sure I have one somewhere. I haven't used it in years, and probably since university, but I don't know why. It is very handy.
I think they were so expensive. I always thought of them as a precision tool, you know, like a regular caliper set. And then you go to the storeroom and then you have to, you know, leave in a deposit to get it back. or at least we did. So then, yeah, you. But now they're so cheap. Why wouldn't you have one knocking around?
Right.
Anyway, Tukutoroto talks how she's using template Haskell to cut down the amount of code she writes. Template Haskell, of course. This made sense when I was listening to it. Now I'm looking at the show notes going, hold on, that all seems to have flown up my brain again.
Yes. I wrote myself a note about this one. I don't usually tell you what my notes are, but I wrote down, this is a tour de force, which left me gasping because there's so much intense stuff in there. I get the principle, but the world of Haskell is so alien. It's just, I came out of that feeling, oh God, it was amazing while I was there, but yeah, same as you. I don't think I've brought much away with it other than astonishment.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you. The few times I've even tried to learn to program in Haskell, I'll start sort of grokking a little bit, and then you listen to an episode like this, and you, like you said, you can kind of follow it, but I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yes, I'm surprised though that the Haskell hawks are not circling HPR for this stuff. I really, there will come a day when somebody discovers, hey, there seems to be a whole series of stuff over here on Haskell and how I do all this sort of interesting things. So, yes, it's only a matter of time, folks. And if you're one of those people, please drop a comment in the comments section, because I know Tukutoroto has been chugging away there for years and could do with some positive feedback, please. Now, next day, laptop power problems. Andrew McNallu, as we know him, had a problem with his laptop power supply and was messing around. Actually, I remember this. Yes, it was hilarious. Hilarious in that first I did this, then that didn't work, then I did this, and then I fixed it with this.
This is true hacking, though, isn't it? I mean, this is some excellent
hacking. In the duct tape sense now is what
yeah.
I don't need that, so I never use that sort of thing anyway. To say it was fixed would not be accurate in this case. It was a solution was achieved.
Yes. Which you could argue is a fix of
Who's up for doing the comment?
I can take it. So Zen Floater 2 said, his title is, I have the Google Geo Pro Chromebook, or Go, I guess, had the same problems. I assume it was a Russian attack at first. It all happened after one of Google's updates. I then just unplugged the Chromebook and powered it off. Then I started the Chromebook up again and plugged it into a power source, and the entire thing was resolved. I also noticed that Slackware 15 had locked up twice on me after my first boot on a different laptop, and the same kind of thing had to be done over there, too.
I have that with my Dell, that if I have the power supply connected in, or anything connected in, I need to unplug it. I think it could be that Intel, they're running a separate Minix operating system or something on there that might be getting...
What is that called? Right, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, sometimes I can't get my machine to boot, so I have to unplug everything, turn it off, and then I can start it up again. Now, Brian in Ohio had Getting to Blinky with Flash 4th. Come forth and flash. Oh, that sounds a lot pervier than I meant it to be. But anyway, yes. This was putting forth on a Arduino, which in principle I applaud, but that's a lot of work.
It's the travels that are the fun part.
Yeah. And if you're a fourth programmer, I guess it's cool. No, it is cool. It's definitely cool. We love it. We love the show. It's brilliant, Brian. Keep them coming. But I have hard enough doing point and clicking to my Arduinos, let alone flash booting them and stuff.
Yeah.
pretty impressive, I thought. It was good to see an actual usage of the installation of Forth and it being used to do things on the Arduino, even if it's just switching LEDs on and off. That's perfectly valid thing to do. It's very, very cool. I tinkered briefly with Forth, but never did anything useful with it a long, long time ago. It's something you really need to dedicate time to, I think, if you want to get into it. But good to follow Brian in Ohio with this.
Real engineer's language, Forth is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, definitely picks up a few kudos as tickets from us here on the whole Neat Hacker Skills front. Oh, crikey. And the next day we had Archer72 installing the Tenacity audio editor, something which I wanted to do myself and use the show in order to do it, in order to check and see if a plugin was working. And therefore I added a comment saying how to run it, and you can run it using Flatpak space run space org dot Tenacity audio dot Tenacity. And that was my comment. Although I recently discovered it just as in the menu, so great.
yeah. I struggled to get it to work personally. But it's a really useful show. There was another comment from Random Linux User. I'm sure I've come across that person before. Installing Tenacity Audio Editor. Tenacity is an almost dead project. If you take a look at their repository closely, you'll see that all that's happening is rebranding. Very little has happened there in the past few months. Audacity has been a work of two guys, Paul Licamelli, James Crook. And without them, I don't see anyone who's capable of adding new features and improvements to it. After all, it has been their brainchild, their labor of love. Telemetry is everywhere, from KDE to Firefox. Unless and until it's stealthy and doesn't give you options to opt out, it's not that bad.
And the last sentence was why the Tenacity fork got forked. There was some telemetry added. And I don't think it necessarily was the opt-in. It was the way it was handled that people had the issue with.
Yeah. There was... I'm sure the people who objected had looked carefully to see if it was just something they could turn off.
Oh, I'm sure everyone who objects to stuff on the internet does that, Dave, yes.
Of course, yeah. Amazingly sensible and know how to speak English properly and everything.
Okay, the next day we had Doug DeMilo and Alex Brown from the OpenSUSE project, and I was so annoyed with this show, and I'll tell you why. Because I was assembling a cupboard at the time, and because I found the show so interesting, I put the 2-inch dowels in where the 1-inch dowels should have gone, and now I've got 4 additional holes on the side of my brand new cupboard.
Oh no.
Yeah. But it was a good show, nonetheless.
Have you ever run OpenSUSE?
I have. And what drove me nuts about it was the fact that the configuration overwrites your configuration files. But that was years ago. I think it may have changed since then.
I'm quite tempted to try. There was a department in the university I worked at that absolutely swore by OpenSUSE. They had it on everything, but we never used it. Well, we ended up running Red Hat Enterprise stuff on all our servers. So it was fancy to just play around with it a bit. Quite tempted to do so after listening to this.
Yeah,
that's the same. It's the same here. I've been pretty much just Debian and then Ubuntu based, but I've been reading about SUSE for years, and I don't know why I've never tried it. I mean, since it's always, some version of it's always been out there, but I don't know.
I mean, it's a free Libre open source operating system. Absolutely no reason why somebody couldn't just boot up a spare laptop and try it out.
Yep. Be a good thing to try.
And make a show of.
Yes, in actual fact. Very good. Thank you very much. That's why I'm paying you the big bucks to be on this show. Keep plugging the send in the show things. HSV component layer modes. And for some reason, I'm thinking of heavy goods vehicles there. But it's about layer modes in the GIMP. And again, you should go to Ahuka's WordPress to get more information on that. No comments. Also another series that I think could do with people commenting on.
Yeah, although Ahuka is always so thorough that sometimes it's like, okay, that's great. I don't know if I have anything to comment on other than that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yes, yes.
Yes, perfectly well, said. That might be nice. Okay. Yeah. I think actually that should be it. I liked the show. Thank you. Anyway, the next day was one of Spoon's with the case of missing ideas. And he pwned our intro. Dave, did you hear that? Very clever. Very clever. And an interesting show, nonetheless. Do you want to do Publicis's comment?
I think it's probably my turn, isn't it?
It is, because I am not going to do a language show. Thank you very much. A comment on a language show.
Okay. Publius, I would imagine, says, have constructions. Most speakers of Western European languages, whether more, e.g. German, or less, e.g. English, inflected, Latin serves as the paradigm for inflected languages. Of course, it's not anything like as commonly taught in schools anymore, but it's still there in the background, serving as the model against which the grammar of the vernacular has traditionally been constructed. For the Slavonic languages, such as Russian, the paradigm is classical Greek. In Latin, there's, of course, a verb habere, meaning to have, as well as tenere, to hold. But it's common to use the copula, or being verb, with the dative. In other words, I have it, or it belongs to me, is often expressed as id mi est, quasi-literally translated into English as it to me is. Interestingly, I've read that in many languages, whatever have constructions exist tend to be taken over by the verb meaning hold or grasp. An obvious example is the way that in Spanish, for example, the verb derived from tenere is used to mean hold, while the Latin habere has essentially vanished. English cognates such as tenure, tenacity, and so on also show a movement from the concrete to the abstract. Wow, cool stuff.
Yes, is that not a series? Somebody just bursting at the seams to do a series on language.
Sounds like it, yeah. I think this person's grasp of these things is much greater than mine. Anyway, I did do Latin at school, but I detested it so much that very, very, very little stuck.
I had the last year of Latin. I was the first year not to have to do Latin in my school.
Ah, that's good.
It's amazing how many times I've regretted that.
Well, having gone on to do biology, then of course Latin is falling on your head all the time, because everything, so many words that you use are Latin origin. But the naming of animals and plants and stuff is all done using Latin terms. So you sort of pick it up that way, but I prefer doing that than sitting through lessons of it, how to conjugate verbs and stuff.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the Monty Python Life of Brian. Well, it gets caught doing the graffiti by the Latin teacher.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, anyway. Yes, other things that I wasn't allowed to do, knitting, and that one I have regretted multiple times.
Yes. These boundaries that existed in the past are very strange.
Yes.
There was a faction in my school, because I was in the, I stayed on till the sixth form in a bit called the remove. So this is another very strange English way of handling parts of learning. We were allowed to volunteer to go into other lessons. So there was a bunch of us who elbowed into the cooking stuff, which was not allowed for boys normally. And but we did, and we learned how to make all manner of good stuff. I'm sure that helped a lot of us. Just, I mean, makes no sense at all that boys shouldn't be allowed to cook. But then the girls weren't allowed to do woodwork or metalwork, which we
extra did, maths classes.
So yeah, good stuff.
Yes, the worst car I ever had, Dave. Bizet released a 30-year-old frustration about a particularly dreadful car he once owned. That said, though, you can tell listening to him that he was loving it. There was love there with that car at the same time. And when he was thinking that, I was thinking, I had a car once that I had the same amount of trouble with, but I loved it. It was my first car, and it was the only thing I could afford. And like the broom handle thing, I must have replaced every component in it twice, you know. So,
yes. We have strayed into March, I should point out.
Oh, dear. just don't worry, Dave. I'll edit that out. Don't you worry. Let me just make a big clap here so we know. There it is. There's the editing mark. No problem.
Yep.
It's just preview of next month.
Yeah. We'll have more to say.
When you hear Bezos say.
We'll have more to say next one. I was really tempted to write a comment to this one, because, or possibly do a my worst car as well, because I can think of several that I would really like to at least list for 5 minutes. So that's a great idea for a show. Brilliant idea for a show. And so I dare say we'll have a bit more to say about it next time around.
Yes, we shall. We might even have our own shows in the queue before then.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing else interesting happened in the month, Dave. Were there any other comments on older shows? Yes, there were. Ken Fallon commented on Automatically Spit Albums into Audacity Tracks by Ken Fallon, saying, I'm a bit surprised to find it was myself that did the show. Is HPR my archive memory module?
Yes, the answer is yes. We had a comment on Klaatu's show about YAML basics from Windigo, who says, exactly what I needed. This episode was the explanation of YAML that I needed. I know it's been years since it aired, but I use the fundamentals explained here every single time I open a YAML file.
Okay. Yes, I can't believe that was only 2020 he recorded that.
I actually need to go back and read that, because I keep running into YAML files at work and it's driving me nuts.
No, go have a listen to that. It's well worth it. WireGuard How To by Tim Timothy. Ken Fallon said, thanks again. Just use this again.
And Tim Timothy on the replies, I think. Me too. Glad at least two of us find it useful. Just setting up a new... to me, Gen 2 ThinkPad, X1, Yoga, and needed to remind myself how to create client keys.
There you go. Load HBR, yeah. Nextcloud, The Hard Way by Ken Fallon. A comment by Ken Fallon, Wasting Shows. Each of these could have been its own show. I am going insane now, but... in that episode, it was broken down into lots of different chapters. The Raspberry Pi 4, how to set up Nextcloud, installing PHP, doing the update, how to set up Let's Encrypt, and it was all how to set up Apache. It was all dumped into one show. So I should have split it up.
There's a Ken Fallon reply to a Ken Fallon show next. Who's going to do that?
This is... Tesseract. What is the name?
Tesseract.
Does that mean something?
It's a geometrical figure, I think. Isn't it? It's a like a hexagon or something like that.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Optical character recognition. I can never remember the name. So yet another one. That was the comment loading memory from myself to myself.
Shall I do the next one? Jezra's show consuming an AQI API. We've got Thank you from Stash AF. Your podcast gave me the idea to do the same for my state's daily COVID updates. I was able to find the API info, break it out so I could extract my states and counties and zip codes, respective numbers. So I don't have to click through several interactive maps.
Awesome.
Ooh. Yeah, that was pretty neat. Shall I take the next one?
Thank you. Yep.
So this is to episode 3504, James Webb Space Telescope by Dave Morris. It's from Clacky. How L2 work? I attempted an explanation of how L2 orbit works over at, it's on libranet.de, but I'll repeat in brief. You can orbit L2 because Earth pulls you. The Y component of the pull keeps you in orbit around L2, and the X component cancels out with your centrifugal force from orbiting the sun too fast. There's a proper and deeper explanation. Launch pad astronomy, how James Webb orbits. Nothing. How James Webb's orbits, nothing. And then there's two links, one on Farside Link Individuals Watch, and then a YouTube. I'm guessing it looks like it goes to the same place.
Okay. So Clacky comment 3 on the show says re-centrifugal force. As to whether the centrifugal force is real or not, I will forever refer to, and he gives an HKCD reference and says forces aren't real anyway. So, yeah, well, yes. It's. I was hoping Andrew would comment on this because he's the real astronomer, and I'm just a visiting biologist. But yeah, we'll see. Thank you, Clacky, for those interesting comments.
Yes, although Clacky, it could have been a show. In fairness, I think we all agree. Do we all agree?
He knows. He knows. I'm sure he knows.
Yes. last month we had a call for shows because there was very little shows in the queue, and I got worried, Dave. I got worried.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So essentially, people, I need to remind you again. Yeah, if you made it this far and you're still listening, then you need to send in a show. There's only so much suffering you can take, and then you can submit a show, and next month you can suffer through next month's episode and hear what we have to say about your show. What could be, you know, this cool, playful banter that we do here could be about your show. So that's an offer too good to refuse, Dave.
It's so good, I'm waiting to listen for my feedback for next month.
There you go.
Yep, very good.
So we do have still quite a lot of slots for before next community news, Dave. And at this point, if you could, like, we have a free slot within the 14-day danger period. And then after that, there's only one or two shows posted. And there's quite a few weeks with nothing at all. So this is... This could be rectified by you doing a series. If you've never submitted a show, obviously just introduce yourself. That's kind of the neighborly thing to do. And yeah, send in shows. Because it's not like every other podcast has got regular hosts and they're doing it for whatever the lulls. This is community sharing, sharing knowledge, sharing stories, sharing language tips, or whatever else hackers find interesting. There's only so many ways I can say that, people. Send in your shows and then I won't have to.
But Ken is persistent and will keep saying it until there's another show.
Please shut me up by sending in shows. So, Dave, what else was there?
So, under the Any Other Business heading, I hope you're able to say that all of the shows in the range 1 to 870 had all been uploaded. I uploaded 120, but there's actually 3, not 4, that didn't get uploaded, and that's because there seem to be some shows already in the system with the numbers, with the identities HBR 0001 and 2. So I can see who you can't view them. They're just there and in the way. I've tried to contact, who was I contacting? I've forgotten. Mr. Text Files.
Yeah, exactly, Mr. Text Files.
I can't remember. Scott, I know his last name is Scott, but I've forgotten his first name. Is it Jason Scott? I can't remember.
Yes.
But saying, because his name is attached to them when you become a, or you log in as an editor, and you can see that 8.4 years ago these were created. So I'd like to know if that's something that needs to remain, or whether I can have those particular IDs, but maybe not. So we're nearly, anyway, the whole point of, I'm waffling. The point of this is that we're 99.9% finished with uploading old shows, and except for these last two or three that haven't been uploaded properly.
Okay.
Very nice work, Dave.
Yes, excellent work, Dave. Sorry. There were some other stuff that I wanted to mention. I have it here in my text file. One is we have moved the Podcast Planet is now on Libera, so everybody should be aware of that. The Google Plus is still in the footer for some reason, and I have a thing marked in here to remove that. We've updated it by arrange permission on the website, and Tlatu, I was bollocking him for the fact that he sent in an intro, and then he pointed out that, well, the website says to send in an intro, so I have updated the website so that there's no, you don't send intro and outro anymore, and that's done. You've also done the HTTPS stuff, Dave.
Oh yeah, I completely forgot about that. Yeah. I wrote a script to walk through all the shows and find instances of HTTP and change them to HTTPS. A little bit of a brutal algorithm, but hopefully it won't cause any issues. Mostly it's fixed issues.
Yeah, and also I went through all the web pages, you know, the pages that generate those. So there's the content that comes from the database, and there's the web pages that are just sitting around as PHP files, and those have also been updated. So if you go to, which is the original issue by Chris Monochromic, was that why are we not totally HTTPS? And the point is, realize later that somewhat, even if you do go to HTTPS site, that some of the links point back to the HTTP ones. So that's all fixed. And then we also have now fixed all the HTTP ones within the content itself. So that's kind of cool.
There might be one or two left over in files. People have submitted HTML files to sit beside their shows.
Yeah.
So I haven't gone through those yet, but that's on, it's on the to-do list.
Yeah, I don't think that's that critical. So mostly if you go to the site on HTTP, you'll eventually end up on the HTTPS link. Otherwise, it's far less likely you're going to get dumped from the HTTPS side back to HTTP. But the site will continue to work in HTTP for the purposes of the fact that it's not required. It's our content is public. So, yes, if you want to download it, if you want the privacy, use the S. If you don't care, then use the use it without the S. Yes. Oh, and I want to say, I've been doing, don't know how long, much longer I'm going to do it. I've been doing a sort of, when the Twitter feed and the Mastodon feed hit the feeds, when the show hits the feed, I reply with, okay, when I just comment on the Twitter and the Mastodon stuff. So if you could boost the tweets on Twitter, that would also be good. Also on Mastodon, if you could just, you know, boost it or post a comment. You can also do comments there, and we might pick them up as well. Don't know how we would do that, Dave, but we should.
No, sure, it's possible. I don't happen to know how to do it at the moment.
I was also thinking of putting in a so many days in the queue thing every day. Tell you what, just tweeting what the, when I say tweeting, I mean Mastodoning, but tooting, that's the one. Tooting the amount of the status of the queue, many days to a show and call for shows and that sort of thing. What do you reckon?
That'd be, That would be pretty cool. I think that'd be nice.
That would be a very good thing to do, I think, because it's easy to not to see that there's a gaping hole on a cliff we're going to go over very soon, and to raise the awareness of that through some route like that would be great, I think.
Only when shoals are getting lower all the time.
If it's too often, there's a process psychologists call habituation, where you stop seeing it. So maybe a sort of emergency thing would be better.
Yeah, or maybe like the first of the month, or when you post the community news, just post like they'd normally post how many days until the next, and then if it falls below a certain level, it just sort of amps it up a little bit.
Yeah, might be an idea, maybe once a week to put out a don't forget to record your show on a Friday evening, don't forget to record your shows for this this weekend.
There you go.
I wonder when sounds people good. Do record their shows. Is there a particular, is there a good day to record your shows that people do it on the weekend or during the week or whenever? Put a comment into this episode or tweet us with the hashtag HPR. Go ahead over.
Sorry, I overstepped you. I was saying, or write a show about the best time for you.
That's it.
Oh, very no. good. Very
I'm
good.
So tired. We're getting you back, that's for sure. All right. Tune in tomorrow for another
Hacker
Public
Radio exciting episode of.
All right, we're going to drop the ball there.
Yeah, this was a ridiculous show. We completely didn't stick with the script. Luckily, I'll edit it. It'll be fine.
Look forward to that.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.